There should be a science of discontent. People need hard times and oppression to develop psychic muscles. From Collected Sayings of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. Jessica awoke in the dark, feeling premonition in the stillness around her. She could not understand why her mind and body felt so sluggish. Skin raspings of fear ran along her nerves. She thought of sitting up and turning on a light, but something stayed the decision. Her mouth felt strange. Lump, 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 lump. It was a dull sound, directionless in the dark. Somewhere. The waiting moment was packed with time, with rustling needle-stick movements. She began to feel her body, grew aware of bindings on wrists and ankles, a gag in her mouth. She was on her side, hands tied behind her. She tested the bindings, realized they were crimscale fiber, would only claw tighter as she pulled. And now she remembered. There had been movement in the darkness of her bedroom. Something wet and pungent slapped against her face, filling her mouth, hands grasping for her. She had gasped, one indrawn breath, sensing the narcotic in the wetness. Consciousness had receded, sinking her into a black bin of terror. It has come, she thought. How simple it was to subdue the Bene Gesserit. All it took was treachery. Hawat was right. She forced herself not to pull on her bindings. This is not my bedroom, she thought. They've taken me someplace else. Slowly, she marshaled the inner calmness. She grew aware of the smell of her own stale sweat with its chemical infusion of fear. Where is Paul? She asked herself. My son, what have they done to him? Calmness. She forced herself to it, using the ancient routines. But terror remained so near. Leto, where are you, Leto? She sensed a diminishing in the dark. It began with shadows. Dimensions separated, became new thorns of awareness. White. A line under a door. I'm on the floor. People walking. She sensed it through the floor. Jessica squeezed back the memory of terror. I must remain calm, alert, and prepared. I may get only one chance. Again, she forced the inner calmness. The ungainly thumping of her heartbeats evened, shaping out time. She counted back. I was unconscious about an hour. She closed her eyes, focused her awareness onto the approaching footsteps. Four people. She counted the differences in their steps. I must pretend I'm still unconscious. She relaxed against the cold floor, testing her body's readiness. Heard a door open, sensed increased light through her eyelids. Feet approached. Someone standing over her. You are awake, rumbled a basso voice. Do not pretend. She opened her eyes. The Baron Vladimir Harkonnen stood over her. Around them she recognized the cellar room where Paul had slept. Saw his cot at one side. Empty. Suspensor lamps were brought in by guards, distributed near the open door. There was a glare of light in the hallway beyond that hurt her eyes. She looked up at the Baron. He wore a yellow cape that bulged over his portable suspensors. The fat cheeks were two cherubic mounds beneath spider-black eyes. The drug was timed, he rumbled. We knew to the minute when you'd be coming out of it. How could that be? She wondered. They'd have to know my exact weight, my metabolism, my... Yui. Such a pity you must remain gagged, the Baron said. We could have such an interesting conversation. Yui's the only one it could be, she thought. How? The Baron glanced behind him at the door. Come in, Piter. She had never before seen the man who entered to stand beside the Baron. But the face was known. And the man. Piter de Vries, the Mentat assassin. She studied him. Hawk features, blue ink eyes that suggested he was a native of Arrakis, but subtleties of movement and stance told her he was not. And his flesh was too well firmed with water. He was tall, though slender, and something about him suggested effeminacy. Such a pity we cannot have our conversation, my dear Lady Jessica, the Baron said. However, I'm aware of your abilities. He glanced at the Mentat. Isn't that true, Piter? As you say, Baron, the man said. The voice was tenor. It touched her spine with a wash of coldness. She had never heard such a chill voice. To one with a Bene Gesserit training, the voice screamed, killer. I have a surprise for Piter, the Baron said. He thinks he has come here to collect his reward. You, Lady Jessica. But I wish to demonstrate a thing. That he does not really want you. You play with me, Baron? Piter asked, and he smiled. Seeing that smile, Jessica wondered that the Baron did not leap to defend himself from this Piter. Then she corrected herself. The Baron could not read that smile. He did not have the training. In many ways, Piter is quite naive, the Baron said. He doesn't admit to himself what a deadly creature you are, Lady Jessica. I'd show him. But it'd be a foolish risk. The Baron smiled at Piter, whose face had become a waiting mask. I know what Piter really wants. Piter wants power. You promised I could have her, Piter said. The tenor voice had lost some of its cold reserve. Jessica heard the clue tones in the man's voice. Allowed herself an inward shudder. How could the Baron have made such an animal out of a Mentat? I'll give you a choice, Piter, the Baron said. What choice? The Baron snapped fat fingers. This woman and exile from the Imperium, or the Duchy of Atreides on Arrakis to rule as you see fit in my name. Jessica watched the Baron's spider eyes study Piter. You could be Duke here in all but name, the Baron said. Is my Leto dead, then? Jessica asked herself. She felt a silent wail begin somewhere in her mind. The Baron kept his attention on the Mentat. Understand yourself, Piter. You want her because she was a duke's woman, a symbol of his power. Beautiful, useful, exquisitely trained for her role. But an entire duchy, Piter. That's more than a symbol. That's the reality. With it you could have many women. And more. You do not joke with Piter. The Baron turned with that dancing lightness the suspensers gave him. Joke? I? Remember, I am giving up the boy. You heard what the traitor said about the lad's training. They are alike, this mother and son. Deadly. The Baron smiled. I must go now. I will send in the guard I've reserved for this moment. He's stone deaf. His orders will be to convey you on the first leg of your journey into exile. He will subdue this woman if he sees her gain control of you. He'll not permit you to untie her gag until you're off Arrakis. If you choose not to leave, he has other orders. You don't have to leave, Piter said. I've chosen. The Baron chortled. Such quick decision can mean only one thing. I will take the duchy, Piter said. And Jessica thought, doesn't Piter know the Baron's lying to him? But how could he know? He's a twisted mentat. The Baron glanced down at Jessica. Is it not wonderful that I know Piter so well? I wagered with my master at arms that this would be Piter's choice. Ha! Well, I leave now. This is much better. Oh, much better. You understand, Lady Jessica, I hold no rancor toward you. It's a necessity. Much better this way. Yes. And I've not actually ordered you destroyed. When it's asked of me what happened to you, I can shrug it off in all truth. You leave it to me then, Piter asked. The guard I send you will take your orders, the Baron said. Whatever's done, I leave to you. He stared at Piter. Yes. There will be no blood on my hands here. It's your decision. Yes, I know nothing of it. You will wait until I've gone before doing whatever you must do. Yes. Well, yes. Yes. Good. He fears the questioning of a truth-sayer, Jessica thought. Who? The Reverend Mother Gaius Helen, of course. If he knows he must face her questions, then the Emperor is in on this for sure. Oh, my poor Leto. With one last glance at Jessica, the Baron turned, went out the door. She followed him with her eyes, thinking, it's as the Reverend Mother warned. Too potent an adversary. Two Harkonnen troopers entered. Another, his face a scarred mask, followed and stood in the doorway with drawn lasgun. The deaf one, Jessica thought, studying the scarred face. The Baron knows I could use the voice on any other man. Scarface looked at Piter. We've the boy on a litter outside. What are your orders? Piter spoke to Jessica. I'd thought of binding you by a threat held over your son, but I begin to see that would not have worked. I let emotion cloud reason. Bad policy for a mentat. He looked at the first pair of troopers, turning so the deaf one could read his lips. Take them into the desert as the traitor suggested for the boy. His plan is a good one. The worms will destroy all evidence. Their bodies must never be found. You don't wish to dispatch them yourself, Scarface asked. He reads lips, Jessica thought. I follow my Baron's example, Piter said. Take them where the traitor said. Jessica heard the harsh mentat control in Piter's voice, thought, he too fears the truth-sayer. Piter shrugged, turned, and went through the doorway. He hesitated there, and Jessica thought he might turn back for a last look at her, but he went out. without turning. Me? I wouldn't like the thought of facing that truthsayer after this night's work, Scarface said. You ain't likely ever to run into that old witch, one of the other troopers said. He went around to Jessica's head, bent over her. It ain't getting our work done, standing around here chattering. Take her feet and... Won't we kill him here? Scarface asked. Too messy, the first one said. Unless you wants to strangle him. Me, I likes a nice, straightforward job. Drop him on the desert like that traitor said. Cut him once or twice. Leave the evidence for the worms. Nothing to clean up afterwards. Yeah. Well, I guess you're right, Scarface said. Jessica listened to them, watching, registering. But the gag blocked her voice, and there was the deaf one to consider. Scarface holstered his laser gun, took her feet. They lifted her like a sack of grain, maneuvered her through the door, and dumped her onto a suspensor-buoyed litter with another bound figure. As they turned her, fitting her to the litter, she saw her companion's face. Paul. He was bound, but not gagged. His face was no more than 10 centimeters from hers, eyes closed, his breathing even. Is he drugged? She wondered. The troopers lifted the litter, and Paul's eyes opened the smallest fraction, dark slits staring at her. He mustn't try the voice, she prayed. The deaf guard. Paul's eyes closed. He had been practicing the awareness breathing, calming his mind, listening to their captors. The deaf one posed a problem, but Paul contained his despair. The mind-calming Bene Gesserit regimen his mother had taught him kept him poised, ready to expand any opportunity. Paul allowed himself another slit-eyed inspection of his mother's face. She appeared unharmed. Gagged, though. He wondered who could have captured her. His own captivity was plain enough. To bed with a capsule prescribed by Yui, awaking to find himself bound to this litter. Perhaps a similar thing had befallen her. Logic said the traitor was Yui, but he held final decision in abeyance. There was no understanding it. A Sook doctor, a traitor. The litter tipped slightly as the Harkonnen troopers maneuvered it through a doorway into starlit night. A suspensor buoy rasped against the doorway. Then they were on sand, feet grating in it. A thopter wing loomed overhead, blotting the stars. The litter settled to the ground. Paul's eyes adjusted to the faint light. He recognized the deaf trooper as the man who opened the thopter door, peered inside at the green gloom illuminated by the instrument panel. "This the thopter was supposed to use," he asked, and turned to watch his companion's lips. "It's the one the traitor said was fixed for desert work," the other said. Scarface nodded. "But it's one of them little liaison jobs. Ain't room in there for more'n them and two of us."
"Two's enough," said the litter-bearer, moving up close and presenting his lips for reading. "We can take care of it from here on, Kinnette."
"The Baron, he told me to make sure what happened to them two," Scarface said.
"What you so worried about?" asked another trooper from behind the litter-bearer.
"She is a Bene Gesserit witch," the deaf one said. "They have powers."
The litter-bearer made the sign of the fist at his ear.
"One of them, eh? Know what you mean?"
The trooper behind him grunted.
"She'll be worm meat soon enough. Don't suppose even a Bene Gesserit witch has powers over one of them big worms. Hey, Zygo?"
He nudged the litter-bearer.
"Yep," the litter-bearer said.
He returned to the litter, took Jessica's shoulders.
"Come on, Kinnette.
You can go along if he wants to make sure what happens.
It is nice of you to invite me, Zygo, Scarface said.
Jessica felt herself lifted, the wing shadow spinning.
Stars.
She was pushed into the rear of the thopter, her crimscale fiber bindings examined, and she was strapped down. Paul was jammed in beside her, strapped securely, and she noted his bonds were simple rope. Scarface, the deaf one they called Kinet, took his place in front. The litter bearer, the one they called Zygo, came around and took the other front seat. Kinet closed his door, bent to the controls. The thopter took off in a wing-tucked surge, headed south over the shield wall. Zygo tapped his companion's shoulder, said, "Why don't you turn around and keep an eye on them two?"
"Sure you know the way to go?"
Kinet watched Zygo's lips.
"I listen to the traitor, same's you."
Kinet swiveled his seat. Jessica saw the glint of starlight on a laser gun in his hand. The thopter's light-walled interior seemed to collect illumination as her eyes adjusted, but the guard's scarred face remained dim. Jessica tested her seatbelt, found it loose. She felt roughness in the strap against her left arm, realized the strap had been almost severed, would snap at a sudden jerk. "Has someone been at this thopter, preparing it for us?" she wondered. "Who?" Slowly she twisted her bound feet clear of Paul's.
"Sure do seem a shame to waste a good-looking woman like this," Scarface said. "You ever have any high-born types?"
He turned to look at the pilot.
"Bene Gesserit ain't all high-born," the pilot said.
"But they all looks, Heidi."
"He can see me plain enough," Jessica thought. She brought her bound legs up onto the seat, curled into a sinuous ball, staring at Scarface.
"Real pretty she is," Kinet said.
He wet his lips with his tongue.
"Sure do seem a shame."
He looked at Zygo.
"You thinking what I think you're thinking?" the pilot asked.
"Who'd be to know?" the guard asked.
"Afterwards?"
He shrugged.
"I just never had me no highborns. Might never get a chance like this one again."
"You lay a hand on my mother," Paul grated.
He glared at Scarface.
"Hey," the pilot laughed. "Cub's got a bark. I ain't got no bite, though."
And Jessica thought, Paul's pitching his voice too high. "It may work, though." They flew on in silence.
These poor fools, Jessica thought,
studying her guards and reviewing the Baron's words.
They'll be killed as soon as they report success on their mission. The Baron wants no witnesses.
The thopter banked over the southern rim of the shield wall, and Jessica saw a moon-shadowed expanse of sand beneath them.
"This ought to be far enough," the pilot said. "The traitor said to put them on the sand anywhere near the shield wall."
He dipped the craft toward the dunes in a long, falling stoop, brought it up stiffly over the desert surface. Jessica saw Paul begin taking the rhythmic breaths of the calming exercise. He closed his eyes, opened them. Jessica stared, helpless to aid him. "He hasn't mastered the voice yet," she thought. "If he fails..." The thopter touched sand with a soft lurch, and Jessica, looking north back across the shield wall, saw a shadow of wings settle out of sight up there.
"Someone's following us," she thought. "Who?"
Then, "The ones the Baron set to watch this pair. And there'll be watchers for the watchers, too." Zygo shut off his wing rotors. Silence flooded in upon them. Jessica turned her head.
She could see out the window beyond Scarface, a dim glow of light from a rising moon, a frosted rim of rock rising from the desert. Sandblast ridges streaked its sides. Paul cleared his throat. The pilot said, "Now, Gnet."
"I don't know, Zygo."
Zygo turned, said, "Ah, look." He reached out for Jessica's skirt.
"Remove her gag," Paul commanded.
Jessica felt the words rolling in the air. The tone, the timbre, excellent. Imperative, very sharp. A slightly lower pitch would have been better, but it could still fall within this man's spectrum.
Zygo shifted his hand up to the band around Jessica's mouth, slipped the knot on the gag.
"Stop that," Kinnett ordered.
"Ah, shut your trap," Zygo said. "Our hands are tied."
He freed the knot, and the binding dropped. His eyes glittered as he studied Jessica.
Kinnett put a hand on the pilot's arm. "Look, Zygo, no need to—"
Jessica twisted her neck, spat out the gag. She pitched her voice in low, intimate tones.
"Gentlemen, no need to fight over me."
At the same time, she writhed sinuously for Kinnett's benefit. She saw them grow tense, knowing that in this instant they were convinced of the need to fight over her. Their disagreement required no other reason. In their minds, they were fighting over her. She held her face high in the instrument glow to be sure Kinnett would read her lips, said, "You mustn't disagree." They drew farther apart, glanced warily at each other. "Is any woman worth fighting over?" she asked. By uttering the words, by being there, she made herself infinitely worth their fighting. Paul clamped his lips tightly closed, forced himself to be silent. There had been the one chance for him to succeed with the voice. Now, everything depended on his mother, whose experience went so far beyond his own.
"Yeah," Scarface said. "No need to fight over."
His hand flashed toward the pilot's neck. The blow was met by a splash of metal that caught the arm and in the same motion slammed into Kinnett's chest. Scarface groaned, sagged backward against his door.
"Thought I was some dummy, didn't know that trick," Zygo said.
He brought back his hand, revealing the knife. It glittered in reflected moonlight.
"Now for the cub," he said, and leaned toward Paul.
"No need for that," Jessica murmured. Zygo hesitated.
"Wouldn't you rather have me cooperative?" Jessica asked.
"Give the boy a chance." Her lip curled in a sneer. Little enough chance he'd have out there in that sand.
"Give him that, and—"
She smiled. "You could find yourself well rewarded." Zygo glanced left, right, returned his attention to Jessica.
"I've heard me what can happen to a man in this desert," he said.
"Boy might find the knife a kindness."
"Is it so much I ask?" Jessica pleaded.
"You're trying to trick me," Zygo muttered.
"I don't want to see my son die," Jessica said. "Is that a trick?"
Zygo moved back, elbowed the door latch. He grabbed Paul, dragged him across the seat, pushed him half out the door and held the knife posed.
"What'll you do, cub, if I cut your bonds?"
"He'll leave here immediately and head for those rocks," Jessica said.
"Is that what you'll do, cub?" Zygo asked.
Paul's voice was properly surly.
"Yes."
The knife moved down, slashed the bindings of his legs. Paul felt the hand on his back to hurl him down onto the sand, feigned a lurch against the doorframe for purchase, turned as though to catch himself, lashed out with his right foot. The toe was aimed with a precision that did credit to his long years of training, as though all of that training focused on this instant. Almost every muscle of his body cooperated in the placement of it. The tip struck the soft part of Zygo's abdomen just below the sternum, slammed upward with terrible force over the liver and through the diaphragm to crush the right ventricle of the man's heart. With one gurgling scream, the guard jerked backward across the seats. Paul, unable to use his hands, continued his tumble onto the sand, landing with a roll that took up the force and brought him back to his feet in one motion. He dove back into the cabin, found the knife, and held it in his teeth while his mother sawed her bonds. She took the blade and freed his hands. "I could have handled him," she said. "He'd have had to cut my bindings. That was a foolish risk." "I saw the opening and used it," he said. She heard the harsh control in his voice, said, "Yui's house sign is scrawled on the ceiling of this cabin." He looked up, saw the curling symbol. "Get out and let us study this craft," she said. "There's a bundle under the pilot's seat. I felt it when we got in." "Bomb?" "Doubt it. There's something peculiar here." Paul leaped out to the sand and Jessica followed. This book is continued on Disc 8. She turned, reached under the seat for the strange bundle, seeing Zygo's feet close to her face, feeling dampness on the bundle as she removed it, realizing the dampness was the pilot's blood. Waste of moisture, she thought, knowing that this was Arakeen thinking. Paul stared around them, saw the rock scarp lifting out of the desert like a beach rising from the sea, wind-carved palisades beyond. He turned back as his mother lifted the bundle from the thopter, saw her stare across the dunes toward the shield wall. He looked to see what drew her attention, saw another thopter swooping toward them, realized they'd not have time to clear the bodies out of this thopter and escape. "Run, Paul," Jessica shouted. "It's Harkonnen's!"